The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Deplorable.
oh yeah.
Generous and deplorable.
I tried to cut it short this week so people wouldn't be as mad at us. But as always, my name is Tim Daniel. His name is Ben Brown. And welcome to this week's edition of Late Night Reds here on the Riverfront Media Network. We're so excited as we're getting closer and closer and closer. And as you see today, we have an awesome guest, one of my favorite people in the world. I've gotten the brush shoulders with the past couple of years. You can check him out with the Associated Press, Jeff Wallner. How are you, man? It's so good to have you here with us.
I am good. I appreciate the invite, Tim, and Ben. And anytime I get a chance to spend some time talking baseball, I'm all in. So,
yeah, that's right. Because you actually have, I don't want to like bury your... talk too much about your hobbies and stuff by any means and make people come after you by any stretch of the matter, but a very impressive collection of Topps baseball cards.
I actually did have an interesting story. After years of talking to the folks at Sports Investments in Montgomery and them calling me and asking, are you ready to sell yet? I actually pulled the trigger on that a couple of months ago, and I sold my collection to Sports Investments. I don't have seller's remorse. I knew I would there for a while, but I've had the collection for quite a few years, and I finally sold them. I had tobacco cards. I had a pretty extensive collection of baseball cards. I miss them, but they're in good hands at Sports Investments. So.
I'm sure if you just walk over, they're probably there saying, like, right. Hey, you remember me?
They'll let me visit them, right?
Yeah, it's like your kids leave for college.
Yeah, you know, some of the autographs will be at consignment. Show up at a church festival near you this summer, and they'll probably be hanging up, you know, at the silent auction.
Absolutely. Okay. So I told you before we got on air that I had a message I had to deliver to you, Jeff, from our leader here at the Riverfront, Chad Dotson. You guys may have heard of him. And I told him that I was having you on the show because I've been friends with Jeff for a little while now. Funny story about that here in a second. And I said, hey, Jeff Wallner from AP is joining me Sunday. A good friend of mine has been covering the Reds for a while. We're going to talk shop. Chad's response is, tell him I said he needs to stop being an Everton soccer fan and he needs to join me at Tottenham.
No chance of that at this point. I am too deeply, deeply rooted and deeply involved in Everton Football Club, probably more so than I ever could have imagined. So, no, I'm too far gone at this point. as much as I'd like to maybe consider my options some weeks. But I appreciate that from Chad. I know he's a massive Spurs fan. We played them to a great 2-2 draw this weekend. So we shared the points, shook hands, went to the pub, and everything was good. So, yeah.
I could see Chad really enjoying pubs. So I did want to tell the story.
Say the least.
So I met Jeff. We covered Xavier basketball together for a few years now. And I'd known who Jeff was for a long time just from reading his stuff and him covering the Reds forever. And so when I saw one day, like, you like go in there, you see where your name is, and you find who you're sitting next, I said Jeff Wallner. I was really excited. And I went to him, Ben, and I made the mistake of, oh, hey, Jeff, how are you? I'm Tim Daniel. I've been reading your stuff since I was a kid. Young.
And if I wasn't so used to those types of comments, I probably would have been offended, but that's all good. Just means I've been around for a long time. And I guess that's a good thing. So
absolutely
work body.
So for those who don't know, how you've covered the Reds since, again, not to put words in your mouth, the 99 team, right?
1999 was my first season. I started as a professional writer in 1994, doing work for the Chicago Cubs, which was kind of a dream come true because that's my childhood team. So hopefully that doesn't make anyone mad on here. But and then I got the opportunity with a free weekly newspaper in Cincinnati. I got the opportunity to start covering the Reds in 1999. Excellent timing, of course, because an amazing team, an amazing season. That unfortunately didn't end with a championship, but that group of guys was fantastic, and I'll never forget them. That team will always hold a special place in my heart. So 30 years later, I'm still doing it, so I feel really fortunate for that. But yeah, 99 was my first season.
Yeah, because I think I remember that, because you talked about the 99 team. We've talked about this a million times, mm-hmm. and I'll never get tired of talking about that team, ever. But that was, you know, the team that were, I was a fan. I was really into baseball as a kid, but that was the team that like sucked me in. That was a team that was like, made me like what I am now, as far as a Reds fan, to the point where I'm doing a show every week on them. And so just kind of having that experience. And you mentioned, those guys on that team. So we have another show on this channel now called Red Lake Roundtable with Seth Shaner, and he just had Eddie Tomsey on there, and they had a lot of awesome conversations about the 99 team.
Yeah, Eddie was one of the favorites of mine, one of several on that team. But he and his wife, Renee, I got to know them very well, still keep in touch a little on social media with them. It was a special group, and I've made some comparisons between this Reds team currently and the 99 team, and a lot of other people have, for the obvious reasons: young, energetic team. Great group of guys who get together or get along very well together, play well together. But yeah, Eddie was certainly one of my favorites on that team.
I think when I look back at that team, and again, we'll probably do like 30 podcasts about the 99 Reds. It's one of these days. It's just inevitable.
Yeah.
That team was just so fun. And we talked about they were a team that was never out of it. I remember many of times whenever they go in the ninth inning, it'd be like 9-4, and they'd like, if they lost, it was like 9-7 or 9-8 kind of things. My ring light just randomly like got super bright. Forgive me for a second. I did not control that. But Greg Vaughn was on that team, obviously, and he was so great. I remember he was on Jim Day's pod a couple years ago, and he was like, I loved Cincinnati. I really liked being on that team. He's like, but like, look, they got the best player in the world. I got it. I understood. Mm-hmm. He's like, but I would have loved to have played there forever. And he still is like within the community sometimes. He still does Reds Fest here and there. So it's kind of cool that even though he was only here for a year, he might be one of the most beloved one-year Reds, probably him and Shinsu Chu.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Greg Vaughn, I always say I had such a great relationship with so many of the guys on that team that year because they treated me like I had been around forever. And I was this rookie reporter who barely knew his way around the ballpark and was still learning clubhouse etiquette, still learning how to do a good interview and ask the right questions. And But they were all great to me. But I always say that Greg Vaughn scared the crap out of me.
I bet.
Greg Vaughn, there probably wasn't a guy on that team that I wasn't comfortable approaching for an interview. Pokey, Sean Casey, Aaron Boone, Danny Graves, and I mean, on and on, these guys were great. And Vaughn was great as well, but he had a presence about him, and he had an expression about him. He was a much more serious guy. He was a veteran player. He was a leader in the clubhouse. And so when you approached him, those first few words out of your mouth to ask a question, he would just kind of look at you. it was extremely intimidating. But yeah, great guy, and obviously was a key member of that team. But I always laugh when people bring up Greg Vaughn, because I think as a young reporter, yeah, it was a frightening thing to go up. Excuse me, Mr. Vaughn, do you have a second?
I bet he was a nice dude, but if I remember correctly, he had a pretty menacing, like he had that goatee, that menacing face. Like, yeah, he would definitely be intimidating for sure if you're a young reporter.
Didn't he break the Reds facial hair rules? Wasn't he the one that they allowed facial hair because of him?
I believe so, yeah. I don't know that for certain, but yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, I thought so. Well, Jeff, throughout the episode, I'm sure I'm going to ask you a lot of questions through your time covering the Reds, since different moments and things like that. But we do actually still have to talk about the current team, obviously. Sure. And I brought this up because I wanted to talk about this. So there's an article today I saw on the Sports Illustrated website, since, you know, it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah.
And that was a very somber yeah, episode.
That was a very somber episode.
Yeah, when we just talked about that. But then I saw the author, and it's our good friend Jeff Carr from Locked On Reds. I forgot he's writing for the Reds site. And he went and said, NL Central favorite, Cincinnati Reds are poised to win the division in 2024. And I put this on the thing before I saw Jeff wrote the article. And I was like, well, I guess, you know, we were recently told in a comment that Locked On Reds is superior to us anyway, so I guess I'll go ahead and give them their pub. But what Jeff goes on to say in there is that with the Corbin Burnes trade this week, which I do want to touch on the Corbin Burnes trade a little separate, like, just kind of get that discussion, is that this opens the door for the Reds to take full advantage of the NL Central. He goes on to mention that, yes, the Cardinals did bring in Sonny Gray, but everything else they brought in is kind of aging guys. He discusses the fact that the Reds actually brought on five actual major league players instead of what we've seen in years past, where it's like, who are these random guys in this revolving carousel of the bullpen? Certainly not a carousel of progress in that circumstance, but we're finally on that road. And kind of talks about that the guys Milwaukee has left are all aging. Brandon Woodruff obviously not pitching this year. The Cubs don't know. I would guess they're going to get Cody Bellinger back, but nothing set in stone there, and all the guys they haven't brought in. And then the Pirates, all they did was improve their bullpen. And after Mitch Keller, their rotation is still a mess. So, Jeff, I ask you this. When you look at this team, being around this team, like you said, you have a lot of excitement when you see this young core group of guys. Where do you sit on that thought process? Do you feel like this is a team just waiting to take the NL Central?
I'm not a big predictions guy, but I will say that I'm really looking forward to watching this division. And the reason is because you've got teams with a lot of youth, you've got teams with a lot of depth, and you don't have those massive stars. The big money contracts we talked about all winter, they didn't go to the Central. We don't have Shohei Ohtani. So we've got a lot of teams top to bottom. I mean, you look at let's not discount the Pirates entirely. You look at how they started the season last year. You knew that they would probably level off, and they did. Milwaukee, sure, Craig Counsell bolted to the Cubs. They made the trade with the Corbin Burnes, but they still have Freddie Peralta. They also got a decent haul, but they got DJ Hall in exchange for Corbin Burnes. The Cubs probably are going to go out and get, maybe bring Bellinger back. They've got Counsell at the helm. They've got the deep pockets. The Cardinals have some good young players. this division is very wide open. And if you're asking me, are the Reds capable of contending for the title in this division? Of course, certainly. I like the Reds' depth. I like what they've done this offseason. I think they made smart decisions with $108 million that they spent. And they're every bit as good as the other teams in this division. There's still some moves that I think are going to be made. I don't know what those will be. Like I said, the Cubs have the deep pockets. You don't know what the Brewers are going to continue to do. You don't know if the Reds are going to make another move. But yeah, right now there's no question. The Reds are division contenders. So are they capable of winning the title? Sure. So I wouldn't discount his prediction, certainly.
Ben, what are your kind of your thoughts on that? I know Jeff's a friend of the show, but
absolutely.
We'll give him his flowers.
Yeah, absolutely, Jeff. I agree. I think that it's kind of like the AFC North in football. Like, I think that all the teams in this division are competitive. All the teams in this division have made moves to be able to win the Central. And I think that they all have another move in their pocket. I do. I really do think that they all have at least one more move to try to solidify them being contenders. So, Jeff, I think you hit it spot on. I think that there are a lot of different things that these teams can do. And just because the Brewers are moving backwards, they still do have decent players on that team. Now, albeit they're aging, older guys, but they do have and they also have a winning pedigree. I mean, those guys have won games. They've won the Central. I mean, some of those guys have won playoff series. So, I think that this NL Central is going to be – I think it'll be a really good race. And I think that all the teams have made themselves – solid to be able to win it.
Yeah, I agree. I really like one of the things Milwaukee did that I wish the Reds would do. They locked up Jackson Chourio long term before he even had a major league at bat because they were so confident in him. I like when teams do that. You've seen the Braves have success with that. It can definitely go either way. I understand that. It's definitely a risk. But I thought that was kind of something where I really appreciated that they kind of got that route because they counted on him. You did mention, yes, those guys are aging. Christian Yelich is still dangerous. So that Brewers outfield is still very solid. Mm-hmm. Every team still has their strengths. I mean, Justin Steele still pitches for the Cubs, and he's still really, really good. But I think that, like you guys said, to kind of just piggyback a little bit more, it does feel like I don't trust the Pirates to be competitive with these other teams. Could I see them maybe winning a 4 or 5 game win streak here and there? Sure. But I look at their lineup and I love Henry Davis's prospects. I just don't see where he, you know, is getting 9 hits every game by himself to get them runs. And that's the kind of where I pulled them back. But everyone else, I mean, St. Louis still has the corner infielders who are really good. I know Tyler O'Neill's not there anymore, but you can kind of count on them. So it's going to be really dynamic. Like I said, I also don't discount Jeff's article. You got to get used to Jeff not on the show and Jeff on the show today, just to make sure we know who we're talking about. But yeah, I think that it's going to be really dynamic. I think you mentioned the Cubs. I don't think they're done. I don't, you know, I really think that they probably have another piece or two up their hands. Also, is Blake Snell going to sign anywhere? Is this going to happen? He won the Cy Young and he's still a free agent and spring training's in 2 weeks. So can we
speed this process up? That's kind of crazy. I mean, that's a crazy thing to think about. I mean, the guy won the Cy Young and he still is not signed anywhere. Like, that's crazy. It's almost unheard of. Like, when was the last time a guy has won, like, the Cy Young or the MVP award or something like that and not been signed and just got this late into free agency?
I remember a couple of years ago when Bryce Harper signed with the Phillies, he signed late. And he had already been announced to be on the cover of MLB The Show without signing for the team. So San Diego Studios is also waiting to see who he's signing with to put the cover together. And that was kind of crazy, but not, that wasn't like an MVP year of his, I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unusual. We'll see. I mean, who has spots open in their rotation? I don't know.
I was going to say, I would have assumed that he'd want to pitch for a contender. So, I mean, who has spots available in that rotation? Who's going to be playing for a World Series, or at least attempting to play for a World Series?
Yeah.
That'll be interesting to see.
Robert brought up Seattle for him. I would like that. I think that'd be a good fit for him. That ballpark. He's talented enough. That'd be kind of fun. Let's get to this real quick. So we did mention it a second ago. Milwaukee does trade Corbin Burns to the Orioles this week. Kind of shocks people. I really am appreciative that they did this because that means that when the Brewers come to town, Corbin Burns doesn't have to have a 7-inning, 1-run outing on us anymore. That's appreciative. But still kind of a surprising move, another kind of this late in the year. I mean, I love that Baltimore team. I think with all the moves they've made these last few years have been incredible. And kind of a team the Reds can kind of model themselves after, right? Like what Baltimore did the year before last year, Cincinnati kind of looks like they're on the verge of doing the same thing. But this is kind of you had heard the rumblings a little bit, but were you guys kind of shocked when you saw this come across your phone the other day?
I was surprised. I'm curious what the reaction has been in Milwaukee. I haven't perused any of the stories from the local guys up there, but surprising. Hall, they got a good pitcher in return. I didn't really dig deep into the other guys that they got, but that's an ace. That's an ace starter.
Yeah.
It makes you think that this is not this is a move that's part of a grander plan. Typically, this isn't a one-off. You don't trade Corbin Burns without knowing what your next, your second, third, and fourth move is. So it'll be interesting to see where they go from here, basically.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that they've got a master plan in mind, and part of that was just moving him and then getting pieces to that master plan. So, yeah, I think that they've got something in play in their thought process in order to build that roster back up. Like we'd already talked about, they've got aging guys that they're trying to rebuild that roster around, but not do a complete overhaul. But when you move a piece like that, you've got to have some other plans in place to think that something else is going to happen.
Yeah. I feel like Milwaukee is baseball's Indiana Pacers, where they'll let guys move on and they might have like a down season, but they're never down long. There's never like a drought. There's never like a 5-6 year losing season drought. It's always like, all right, well, this year wasn't our year. We were 76-86. And then the next year they're contending for a wild card. And the next year they win the division. It's like every single time. And like, that's what the Pacers do. It's like, well, things didn't work out with Paul George. So let's do this. And then now they're really good again. I know, as you know, Ben, I know, but
you also feel like they're a team that has missed their window or they're real close to missing their window. Yeah. You're built for a championship and you continually get yourself in position for that. And then you fall short. And then you've got tough decisions to make with your players as they're getting older and those contracts come up. And you feel like they're at kind of the end of their window, whereas the other teams in the division, I feel like, are just starting one.
Yeah, so I agree. And then there's the Pirates.
And there's the Pirates. See, you like how I did like throw them just a little glimmer.
You did.
In my opening response, I made sure that I just threw them in. Look, the Pirates. Right? But let's face it.
We kind of talked about this last week. Kind of your thoughts, Kirisha, especially because you consider you covered them for 6 years or so. So you're starting to see this thing. So they signed Aroldis Chapman. And I was kind of in the group I was very much in the group that was kind of hoping the Reds would bring him back. I do think they got a better pitcher in Brent Suter, so I'm not disappointed. But we're seeing this weird thing with him now, and I understand he's not Cincinnati Aroldis Chapman anymore, so I'm not trying to make him better than he is at this circumstance. But we've seen this 2 years now where he's signed with these teams that, Kansas City and Pittsburgh, where it's kind of like a thing where it's like, find a little bit of your old self so we can flip you in a trade and send you somewhere else. And obviously last year he goes to Texas. He's part of a team that wins the World Series. Two-time World Series champion Aroldis Chapman, by the way, is a sentence I never thought I'd say if it didn't involve the Cincinnati Reds. But are you kind of surprised at this point that this is where he is, what he's at now? So that he's going to be pitching for the Pirates this year as kind of a thing where it's like, hopefully I'm good enough come July. I can get traded to a team that's going to fight in the race.
Surprised at his age and this point in his career that he's at not in a better situation, or
I guess I don't know.
I'm a little surprised he's still out there. You know, he's still out there chucking it,
still throwing, hitting triple digits. Yeah,
you know that he's still that he's still tipping the radar gun. But he, I mean, good for him. And but I'm sure he's looking for another opportunity to win. You get a taste of that, and you know, you experience a World Series title, you're going to look for that again, and you're not going to be content with pitching for a team that's in the bottom of its division. But in, as far as the Reds, I don't think he makes any constructive sense for the Reds to bring him back. I don't, you know, Brent Suter is a much smarter, for so many reasons, it's a much smarter acquisition because of how he fits into the bullpen puzzle. I love that. And it has nothing to do with him being a local guy, but I know you're asking about Aroldis Chapman, and I'm about to go on a tangent about Brett Suter.
No, please.
But I love, even if he wasn't, and I know it's kind of the way we do things in Cincinnati. We're always enamored guys that are from here, guys that went to high school here. Oh, we gotta bring them back.
Yeah. Right?
But what Suter brings is a totally different look to the bullpen. He's not a high strikeout guy. He's a low velocity guy. He's all about deception. He's a crafty, you know, pitcher, not to use an overused baseball term, but how he fits into this. Can you imagine, you know, you face Hunter Green a couple times through, and then in comes Suter, and you're like, you know, you're falling over yourself trying to, you know, not be out ahead of it. But it's that's a great acquisition, I think. It has nothing to do with the fact that he's local and that he went to Mueller. It's just a very smart move on the Reds' behalf, I think.
Yeah, so obviously I was knew he was pretty good from his time pitching against the Reds. But it was last year that really impressed me the most, when he was in Colorado. And he pitched a whole season in Coors and did not give up a single home run at Coors Field.
None. Zero.
That's insane.
Mm-hmm.
I think he gave up like two on the road. Like, he's not. So coming here, obviously everyone's got, you know, I'm sure that'll fluctuate a little bit more just because of the ballpark he's been pitching most of his games in. I don't suspect he'll go next year with only giving up two home runs. But I still think he's going to be very, very good, like you said. A really good ground ball pitcher, which is just what this bullpen needs. You mentioned, imagine facing Hunter Green two or couple times around the lineup. Imagine Brent Suter comes in from that, and then Alexis Diaz comes in the ninth right after him. Like, that is kind of like that fluctuation thing. So, I love the signing. I think it might actually be my favorite one of the offseason.
It's super sneaky, dude. Like, it's a super sneaky signing. Like, it it didn't seem – it's not the big, sexy one that everybody else was looking for, but, dude, that guy is so crafty. He does such a good job of getting outs and ground ball outs and getting big outs and innings. Like, it was a super sneaky pick.
I think all the guys they brought in are good. Candelario, obviously. You know, I put him right there with Suter, but Nick Martinez. They spent very, very smartly, I think. So all of a sudden they have depth. Pitching depth, you know, spring training is going to be really interesting this year, because David's going to be mixing and matching in the infield, the outfield. There are going to be guys battling for bullpen spots, rotation spots, you know, guys coming back from injury. This might be the most compelling spring training. Typically spring trainings, you know, there's a lot to watch in this spring training this year. There's a lot to watch.
Mm-hmm. I ask you this as someone who was at the ballpark a lot last year. I was there in the stands, obviously, having one too many Blue Moons. But
Yeah, right.
But you being in the media section and hanging out there, so being there consistently a part of your job. The excitement, obviously, in the ballpark, you could obviously tell. And it wasn't just because, you know, obviously the winning certainly was the reason, but just that, like, energy when you'd walk there every night and get in there. What was it like for you guys in the media room? So you, Charlie, Trent, just kind of going there every day and just being like, this is freaking, I bet there was, like, there had to be some sort of, like, especially once Ellie comes up, there had to be some sort of, like, super excitement. Like, I know you love going to your job every day because you're covering sports, but something just had to be a little different during that, right?
Yeah. And I've had the, just working for not just the AP, but when I, all those years I worked for Reuters and working for a wire service, you're, when you cover a game, you're covering both teams. So I have the perspective of all of the visiting teams, as well as the Reds teams over the past, you know, couple of decades. And young teams are always the best teams to be around. In winning just kind of magnifies that. But when you have young teams, there's always excitement, there's personality, they're eager to come to work. They're even mostly eager to talk to us, which is, you know, a crazy thing. the further they get in their career, the more tired of us they get. But so you have that combination of, you have a young group of players, but also guys that have really good personalities. I mean, I'll go down the list and back to kind of the comparisons to 99. It feels very similar. But yeah, a lot of energy. And then when you have somebody like Ellie come up, and that kind of elevates the whole group. It's definitely a fun group of guys to be around. Great to work with, great to talk to. And there is a little bit of, you sense a little bit of a buzz about it when you have a young team that's being successful. But I will say that before they brought up the full crop of players, even last year when they were, or the year before when they got off to that horrendous start, I was impressed with the way, like, that group of players, and it's a credit to David Bell as well, they didn't implode, kept waiting for the whole thing to just completely fall apart. And they didn't. And they ended up playing pretty good baseball for an extended stretch of that season. Mm-hmm. And then I think at the very end, I think it's just injuries and everything kind of caught up, and they finished almost as poorly as they started. But in the middle, they played really good baseball. You felt like the team was coming together. And that was before they opened the floodgates and all these guys came up the following year. But you felt like that culture that David Bell and the players that were here started to build carried over into the next season, and then just continued to get better and better as these guys started to come up. They've done real well evaluating people. Obviously, talent's the biggest thing, but I think there is something to clubhouse chemistry, just talking to players and managers over the years. There is something that about that where you get the right mesh of guys. And I think the Reds have that now. But of course, when you're winning, everything's right. Great. But I feel like this group, even when they were hitting those ebbs and flows, even when they were going through a tough stretch, and if you remember last year, every time it seemed like, okay, here we go, they lose two or three in a row, here we go, boom, they come back and they win, you know, they win the next six. Yeah. And then they'd lose three or four in a row, here we go. And then they'd come back and they'd win. It was, and even after the 12 game winning streak, they lost, I think, four straight after that. I may have my numbers wrong. And you thought, okay, back to earth, this thing's going to kind of crash hard at this. Nope. You know, they just picked it right up and got back on a streak. So really, really good chemistry with this club and really good personalities in the clubhouse. So yeah, it's been a fun group to be around.
Yeah, because you mentioned that, and I think that's a really good point, because even if you look at like 2012, there's obviously a lot of rumblings of a lot. Some guys weren't very liked on the team. Matt Latos, I'm sorry, workout was one that people kind of brought out quite a bit. I'm not asking you to comment on that. Don't worry, Jeff. but it seemed like, you know, you heard like a lot of like, yeah, this, we liked when that guy towed the rubber for us, but it wasn't someone we went out with on the road or anything. I think that kind of is a really good point, because that team was near perfect at times and still had kind of had those moments. And this team, it seems like everyone's just kind of in the thought process of, we're all going to be fine. We're all going to be like, we're going to be good. We're going to learn this together. And I think that's cool too. I think one of the things that we've talked about a little bit throughout this off season, because, you know, we're just, as a Reds podcast, we're just dying to find things to talk about at this point with this close to spring training, is, I think that one of the cool things this team has is it's the first time for like McClain and Ellie that they can have a spring training. They can have an off season to be prepared or trained for as a big leaguer. And what I mean by that is Ellie and Matt McClain obviously always knew that they were going to be in the major leagues. So they were kind of prepping for that, but they saw what being in the big leagues was like last year and how to carry that to this. Mm-hmm. And I think that's going to pay so many dividends for them moving forward. I know this is our next segment that I wanted to bring up, but I wanted to kind of get a laugh out of this. So Joey put up a video on his Instagram the other day. I don't know if you guys saw it, where he was training and he was in the cage and he was talking to you about what he does when he trains and stuff. Mm-hmm. Really cool. Cause you know, I can listen to Joey Votto talk hitting
all day.
Yep. And inside the comments were this team. And you've heard that when everything happened with this contract, that some of the guys were like, we still want him back. But I was cracking up because Spencer Steer pops in there and he's like, Joey, your arms are looking a little small there, bud. And like, so I thought that was a good kick. But speaking of Joey Votto at Instagram, were you guys following the mascot hunt yesterday?
Yes, I did see the mascot hunt.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
You know, it's interesting because I was just talking to my wife about this the other day, because she said, you think he's gonna sign with anyone? I think actually our son, I think, might have seen the TikTok video of the mascots or whatever. And the weird thing is, he loves to travel. He's a really kind of interesting guy. He's got a lot of interests. He's got a lot of things he likes to do. There he is at the NHL All-Star game. He's with the mascots. And part of me wonders, like, why does he want to come back to the 6-month grind, which is an 8-month grind if you include spring training and if you're on a team that goes to the postseason? I know he still loves it. I know he still feels like he can play at 40, and I don't doubt that he can. But I don't know. I kind of thought this is a guy who's going to ride off into the sunset, retire as a Red, and he's going to show up on Instagram and TikTok traveling the world and getting involved in all sorts of things and become kind of a social media celebrity, but live his best life. You know, live his best life, but obviously he wants to come back and we'll see where he lands. But I saw that and I was like, guys having such a good time. Like, why do you want to, you know, be back playing baseball? But you know, yeah.
Yeah. I thought that too. Like, cause you know, he's got all the money you could ever need. You know, and he travels, he likes to do all these weird things, but I it's just weird. I think the competitor in him, I think that's part of it. He just didn't want to go out that way, even though he may not get signed. He may have to go out that way. I think that's just when you've competed for that long and play at that high level, I think he wants to go out on his own shield. And this, not that the Reds did anything wrong. It is what it is, but he was not healthy to the last day. I still don't think he was healthy. So I think he wants to show himself more than anything, probably, that he can still play this game at a high level and do the things that he needs to do. But I do think that, Jeff, I thought it was cool, like him, you know, showing up with mascots, and he plays chess. He, you know, he does all kinds of different things. And why not just walk away with your 260 something million or whatever you made over your lifetime and ride off into the sunset. But I think the competitor to him is like, man, I got one more in me.
Yeah. I think also his mind, the way that he preoccupies himself with every aspect and detail of playing baseball and hitting a baseball, that I do think that it will be, when that time comes for him to retire, it's going to be a big adjustment for him to mentally to not have that every day, thinking about hitting, every day analyzing what he's doing, you know, every day watching the video, every day being in the cage. It, beyond the normal player, no matter how great they are, there are some Hall of Fame, some of the greatest ever, that didn't come close to the time and energy and mental just preoccupation with being successful in this game that Joey Votto has. I think that's a big part of it, is that will be a big adjustment for him.
Yeah, I think that part of it he'll struggle with a lot. And I think that he'll have to find other ways to challenge himself. Just because he'll be, like you said, he's so used to doing that every offseason and every year. When it's not there anymore, then it's like, what does he do?
Man. Still hang in the studio. He's not going down anytime soon.
Yeah.
Actually, come to think of it, I'm curious to ask you this, Jeff, just from your time covering him. So you mentioned the social media superstar that he kind of has become these last few years. But you also knew him when he was, well, you were covering him, I should say, when he was not as outspoken and was kind of shy and was kind of still coming out of his shell. Does a lot of this shock you? Was there stuff that you kind of saw like glimpses of when, his pre-MVP year? Or?
I think it at some point, and I don't know, that there are guys on the beat, because keep in mind, obviously, I'm not a beat writer, so
right.
I'm not, you know, and I cover both teams when, you know, there's a series in town, and so I'm dealing with players on both sides. But from my interactions with him, at some point there was a big shift in, he kind of came out of his shell, and other guys might, Trent, I'm sure probably has a strong insight into kind of what might have contributed to that. For a long time, I'll be very honest, I didn't want to ask Joey Votto a question unless I had to, because you would ask him a question and then he would ask you to restate the question. And then he would ask you to explain, he would divide the question up into three parts and ask you to analyze all three parts. And it became so, I was like, it's like, I got to the point where, okay, now I just want a cliche. Now I just want a cliche. Just tell me you want to play every game one at a time. Just let me, I have a deadline. I need a quote. That's all I need. It was painful. But I didn't, you know, deal with him every day like the beat writers. So I didn't have that same relationship, but yeah, it was difficult. But then, like you said, over the last few years, not just on social media, but with teammates in the clubhouse, I think being around a young team like this, and he hasn't been in this situation in his career where you've had this to this extent, a clubhouse of these young guys. I think he really enjoyed that. And he said it. I think he enjoyed being a big brother. He enjoyed being a father figure. He really loved these last 2 years with the Reds because of all those young guys. I think that might contribute to kind of his shifts in his outgoingness and everything. But I know he loved being around these young players, and they're going to miss him. As you said, they're popping into his, into his social media and still joking around with him. But that's the relationship he had with all those guys.
Yeah. It's so funny you talked about just wanting the cliche, just because I've obviously you and I have been in media rooms together. And do you remember this year when we had to interview Kelvin Sampson after the Houston Xavier game, and every question, every answer was 6 minutes long?
Yes.
We got great stuff. We're not complaining. Yeah. But it was like, it was one of those things where it was like, can you just say you guys rebounded really well and we can get to the next question at some point?
And he's, and I have my recorder on, so I'm recording everything he's saying just in case I don't miss something that is, you know, worthy and usable. But at the same time, I'm typing in the quotes into my, and I'm just taking out sections of what he's saying. I'm like, all right, I can use that sentence, you know, and I'm just like dropping in sentences into my game story. Samson said, you know. And then I'm recording the rest in case, well, maybe there is something, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. He could fill up a recorder.
Yeah, he probably could. He probably is willing to as well. Right. So I want to touch on this real quick. We've kind of been doing something through the offseason. We've been talking about different guys and looking at their Fangraph projections. And so, Ben, everyone we've looked at so far, Fangraphs has been like, yeah, you're going to see them improve. You're going to see them get better. You're going to see this.
Yeah.
Today, when I looked up this player, it was the opposite of what we've seen all offseason.
Yeah.
And Fangraphs is predicting a nice little drop off for one Will Benson. So for those who obviously know, last year Will Benson, 275, 365, 498 slugging. Fangraphs is looking at this year as a potential 226, 339, 412 for him. It seems like in a roundabout way. And again, projections are projections are projections. So we know this is not gospel. But I think this is kind of one of the interesting ones, because it is the first time we've seen this offseason where it's a guy that they're not, the projections aren't as high on.
Mm-hmm.
I love this kid. I think we've talked about that a million times. The home run against the Dodgers is one of my favorite moments of the year. And I think the athleticism is impressive. The way that he worked from getting sent down and coming back up and kind of making himself a true major leaguer was impressive. But I think when we look at all these guys, and we are excited about them, and we should be as fans, the chance that they all pan out to be what we think they are is really unlikely, right? So one of these guys does have to drop off. And maybe I'm not trying to downgrade him, because I do love him. I want him to be really successful and be a really good player. But I'm not shocked by this projection.
If again, not just keep going back to, I've been around a long time around this game. And if you ask me, will this insert young player have a drop off next year after having a great first or second year, my answer is going to be yes, no matter who the player is, because this game is unforgiving and those adjustments are tough. And the amount of data that's out there right now, the advanced scouts are so far ahead of any player. So if you ask me, will Benson have a drop off? My answer is probably going to be yes, but I'll give you one reason why. Well, there are a few reasons. One, I think he's a great kid. I think he's a smart player. And I think he's got a ton of ability. If I give you one reason why I think he won't have a drop off next year, it is, I keep going back to last year, there were two or three instances where here's a young guy who's got power, who's hit some big home runs, right? And it's easy for a young player to get kind of in their head, that's who I am. That's how I'm approaching my at bat. I'm looking for something I can drive, right? And that's your mindset. But on two or three occasions last year, I saw Will Benson after, I think one of them was a 12-pitch at bat. One of them might have been a 14-pitch at bat or something. It was something insane. Draw a walk. I've never seen, and I brought this up to David Bell as well, and he said it was a testament to Will Benson's character and his approach at the plate, but I've never seen a young player be more excited drawing a walk.
I remember that, yeah.
He bat flipped a walk as well as anyone. You know, Joey will bat flip a walk, but that's Joey. You know, that's what he's all about. He's about quality at bat. Here's this young player with a lot of power, a lot of pure athletic ability. And this guy is working a 12 pitch at bat to draw a walk, flipping his bat, pumping his fist the whole way down the first baseline. Things like that tell me that he won't have that he might have a drop off because that's natural, But there's a ton of ability in there and a ton of plate discipline in there with Will Benson that is unique for a young player like him.
Yeah, I completely agree. Ben, do you want to add anything?
But the Reds need that. I'll tell you that if you ask one thing that the Reds are missing, and in this day and age, not all teams have it, but do they really have – they don't have that one guy – that one masher in the middle of the lineup. It's kind of home runs by committee, right? It's RBIs by committee. Mm-hmm. A lot of guys contribute to that, including, you know, Will Benson, but they could use a consistent big power bat. I mean, he's got the ability to be that, but I don't want him to change his approach at the plate though. And his see his strikeout numbers go up and things like that. But
yeah. I do think, like you said, I think it's fair to suspect that there'll be guys who drop off. I don't know if is OPS going down 60 points is.
Yeah, that's a ton.
That's a big drop off. That's like, so I hope that's not the case, but do I see him being that 255, 265 guy? Sure. Yeah. Oh, here he is. Oh, Boss Man is watching us. We're on a
yes,
we're being supervised.
We're being supervised. but no, I would agree. I don't think that. I mean, those are big drop offs, man. I think that we've talked about this on the show before. Will Benson is a guy that he seemed to have really good at bats a lot of times in the season. So I that big of a drop off for a guy that has some quality at bats and has had quality at bats. And I don't know if it's because they think he's going to have more at bats this year that he's going to have the drop off. I'm not sure, but some of those numbers that you showed there are really huge. That's huge drop offs for him.
Yeah.
I just don't see that. Now, is there a chance he could have a little bit here and there? Like you all said, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think that's with any baseball player. Jeff brought up a good point. Baseball is a grueling, grinding game. Like there's a possibility of that with any player, but Will Benson is a quality baseball player who takes every at bat and takes advantage of every at bat. So I don't see those kind of drop-offs, but you know, I think he's going to have another good year.
I think
he also had that lengthy, he had that long hitless streak, didn't he? And then he jumped into the stands down the third baseline to make a great catch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What does that say about a young player who a lot of young guys would just be down on themselves? They wouldn't be no interest in putting in the work defensively, that their mind's consumed with how long can I just stay up here? Are they sending me down tomorrow? What's going on? And this guy's jumping up into the stands on the third baseline to catch a foul ball. It's, you know, he's an impressive individual, and he's got his head on straight, and I think he'll put the work in. All of these guys that we saw such great things from last year could have somewhat of a drop off. The key is consistency. That's where success in baseball is measured over those 6 months, which is why I always say baseball is just not built for social media. It doesn't fit. It doesn't fit with the immediate gratification of this day and age, because baseball's success isn't measured in days or even weeks. It's measured in months and it's measured in seasons. So the key is to be successful. You're always going to have ebbs and flows, but what's your body of work at the end of the day? You know, what would your season look like? And if you have that consistency, you're going to be successful and you're going to help your team. And I can see him being a pretty consistent player. But how those numbers look at the end of the year, I don't know. He could bat so many different places in the lineup too.
Right. Yeah. That's a big thing too.
So, yeah.
I think, like I said, drop off, yes. 60 points, probably not. I suspect it's more likely he finds a hat that fits him next year than he has that big of a drop off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. So, a couple things before we wrap this up. And Jeff, you've been awesome, man. I'm so happy I got to have you on. I don't know why I waited so long to invite you, first off. That's my fault.
Yeah, it is. That's definitely your fault, man. Yeah. Jeff's
all good. Fault. Have me back. Come back.
Oh, please. Yeah, absolutely.
We're gonna have a lot to talk about this season.
So I want to bring up a couple things, and this is just being stupid and fun, so bear with me here. So those who are nerds like Ben and I who love the One World Wrestling of Entertainment saw that one Dwayne The Rock Johnson made his triumphant return to be in the main event of WrestleMania this year, which is bad.
Are you going
to
ask me a wrestling question? Because I have
no. What I'm getting to bear with me. I've got this. I'm going to see if you guys agree that we should do this in all sports. We're like a 50-year-old who hasn't had a big league at bat in 10 years. Can you imagine? It's like game 7 of the World Series, runner in scoring position. It's 2-2 in the ninth. And is that Adam Dunn's music coming to the plate? Right? Are you intrigued? Yes.
Yeah. I don't know how it'll go, but you got my attention.
Of all the people you could have picked.
Right. I thought you were going to say Ken Griffey Jr. or something. I'm like,
that's too
nice.
Ken Griffey Jr. is too on brand for me. We know this. Yeah, right. I mean, like, you know what? Right there.
I'm like, to see the kid take a bat at 52 years old, yeah, I'd pay to see that. You know what I mean?
But,
yeah, he was just with the World Baseball Classic. He was the hitting coach on the team. Did you see that clip last year where he's like in the cage and they're all just like kids again? Like,
oh, dude, yeah.
I'd be that exact way.
How did his swing look? It probably was spotless.
Unbelievable. Just unbelievable. Like it always was. Yeah. Yeah. I suspect that like Ken Griffey Jr.'s swing probably ages the way that like a Larry Bird 3-point shot does. It's just the same as it was then and still looks just as pretty. I wasn't going to ask you a wrestling question. I just thought that we should allow this in all sports. Like, can you imagine if there's ever the day the Bulls were good again and it's like, oh, it's 95-93. There's 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter. And here comes Michael Jordan.
Yeah.
Take the last shot.
Yeah. See? That's entertaining.
Yeah.
How
old was Satchel Paige when he came?
Right. No one knows. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Yeah. I guess we probably didn't even know. Yeah.
But I guess he was supposed to be in his 40s when he signed with the Indians. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mid to late 40s.
Yeah.
Throwing like 96. Yeah, that's a fun one. It's like, oh, it's there's 5-4 in the bottom of the ninth, and they need to get these outs. And here comes Dennis Eckersley to pitch the ninth inning. Like, all right, I'm tuned in. Let's see what happens.
Let's see what happens.
Joey Votto could draw a walk at 50.
That yeah, I agree. Yeah.
He could draw a walk at 50.
No question.
I agree.
Yeah. Give him 24 hours to study the pitcher, and he'd draw a walk at 50. Yeah.
I heard a rumor, and I can't confirm this. Carlos will not confirm this, even though he's good friends with Joey. He won't tell me if it's true or not. But I guess there was a rumor that he had heat maps for umpires. Like, he saw what their strike zone was that they called before games, so he knew what to prepare for in the box.
Oh, I would.
I don't know if that's true, but I would be surprised if it's not.
Right. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, I would bet money that he would study all the umpires. He's going. Oh, no doubt.
And I wouldn't think he's the only player that does that either.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot do. And I'm sure there's books on, there's a book on everything, I'm sure.
Yeah. I'm excited for the day that someone's got to write he's got to write a book, right? He's too interesting to not have an autobiography.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. He's just too fascinating to not have one. So I know Chad's written books. Maybe Chad, I know you're probably still in the chat. Can you and Joey combine to be like his autobiography? You can be his ghostwriter. I think you need to do that and get everyone that works really hard on the Riverfront Network for you a copy. No big deal. But my last question before we get out of here, I wanted to ask you about it. I've talked to you about this before. So this is something, but you know, I've told you about my biggest dream to do is like a lifelong series podcast, 3 or 4 episodes about the Griffey trade. And I really wanted to do something just going into how everything came together, how it worked. And I've asked you to be a part of it at some point. Like, if I ever do this, would you do it? Which I very appreciate you did tell me yes. But I wanted to ask you about, what do you remember from that? Because like you said, young reporter, you know, at the point he's one of the 3 best players in the world, the best player in the American League at that point for years at that point. What do you kind of remember about the energy during that time?
I remember the rumors that have been out there for for quite some time. And in the days leading up to it, they intensified. So I'm a young reporter just trying to ask anybody who might know, is this coming? When's it? We kind of knew it was coming, but we weren't sure when. I remember most from that day, and I was living in OTR at the time, so I walked to the stadium for games, and I remember that day it was kind of rainy and dreary, and I was sick as a dog. Like, I was totally on my back sick that day, and I kept thinking, okay, don't make the trade today. And then the press release comes across. So I pack up my stuff and I walk down to the stadium. No, we didn't have a streetcar then. I walk down to the stadium and we're in the Crosley room, and it's like 120 degrees in there. And there's not room for one other individual packed into that room. There wasn't a chair. I was literally on one knee and holding my recorder up to record the comments. I've said in the years since, like, I won't be a hypocrite and say, I knew this wasn't going to work out. Come on. You know, you're adding the greatest player of our lifetime to a team that won 96 games the previous year, with all of that young talent around them. But in hindsight, I see now what Jack McKeon saw, which was that this club had other needs, and Mike Cameron was a huge loss, huge loss for that team. And that's nothing against Griffey. The injuries weren't his fault at all. I get the point that, well, he played in Seattle. He was playing on turf, should have seen it coming at his age. He's going to break down. You don't know that. You don't know that. And a healthy Ken Griffey Jr. was still an amazing player, and he would have been an amazing player for the Reds, and he would have helped them win games. But overall, that club needed pitching. There were things that they needed. And that was the beginning of the end for Jack McKeon. Mm-hmm. And then, nine straight losing seasons or something in that stretch. It just didn't work out. I enjoyed being around Junior, as difficult as he was when the camera lights and the recorders were on. When they were off and you were just with him in the clubhouse talking baseball in general terms or just talking about his family, one of my favorite people I've ever been around in my 30 years doing this. But it didn't work out. And it was another Jim Bowden looking for the shiny toy, you know, what's the shiny, the bright, shiny object I can get? What's going to make me a hero in this town? Well, it's going to be bringing Ken Griffey Jr. back home. Well, that's not the way that's not the way you run a baseball team. You know, you make smart, calculated decisions based on what your team needs. And as great as Junior was, it's really not what they needed at that time. And that's unfortunate. Because that's a team that should have won a championship, and it was really somewhat unlucky that they didn't win in 99. My wife still hates Al Leiter. She didn't even know who he was before that one game playoff when he shut him out. But could go on and on kind of dissecting the Griffey trade. But that day I remember like it was yesterday, just because of how I felt in the hot Crosley room. And I remember the comments from a lot of the people that spoke. I think Bowden might have made a comment, or maybe it was Carl Lindner, who had a handwritten piece of paper like on the podium that he was reading, and it still took him forever to kind of get through it. God bless him. But I think Bowden might have made the comment, we brought baseball back to Cincinnati or something.
Oh boy.
Something along those lines, and that kind of hit some people wrong, because they're like, look, we won 96 games last year and baseball never left Cincinnati. You know, so it was, I think he was around for a little longer, but I think it was the beginning of the end for Jim Bowden too, the way that worked out. But that day, I mean, I'm surprised they didn't have a ticker tape parade in town, as happy as everyone was. So
I tell the story all the time. So respectfully, I was only 10 years old. And I was in school in Bellevue at the elementary school, and where my parents' house was right on the corner from where I was in school. And our gym teacher was like, "Hey, the registrar traded for Griffey." At this point, I didn't know about the rumors and how to get all that stuff at the time. And I was like, "No way, you're crazy." So I ran home, turned on SportsCenter. And that was back in the day when SportsCenter had the graphics where the player's head would pop up in the corner of the screen.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Griffey in a Reds hat. And I was like, you know, 10-year-old me, like crying, like, "Oh my God," calling my mom at her work, like, "Did you see this?" And so it's one of my favorite days of my childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's something like I'll just never let go of. Like, even though, like you said, it did not go the way it was supposed to, my hero coming to play for my favorite team. And then my favorite football player of all time is Deion Sanders. And in 2001, I almost saw them playing the same outfield together. But when Griffey came back was when Deion got released. So,
yeah. Well, and Griffey will always have the Josh Fogg story. Do you remember that, Tim? He made a bet. I think it was a sporting event bet, or it was some, I don't know, horse. I don't know what it was, but some sort of a bet with Josh Fogg, and he lost. So he paid Fogg. Apparently it was a considerable amount, but he paid him in pennies.
I did know this. Okay. Yeah. I did.
When we came into the clubhouse the next day, there was a stack of boxes of rolled pennies that went from the bottom of Fogg's locker all the way up to the top. I mean, it was thousands of dollars in pennies that were stacked in Josh. He had a great personality, but yeah.
So shout out Red Lake Roundtable again. Seth just had Scott Hatterberg on. And Scott was awesome. And I promise I am wrapping up soon. I just, telling this story just made me want to bring this up.
I could talk baseball forever, so just keep going.
I know, but Curb Your Enthusiasm came back tonight, and I think if I don't watch it, my wife's going to kill me.
Ah, got it.
Yeah. I'm kidding. We've got DVR for a reason. But so Seth asked Hatterberg, like, what was playing with Griffey like? Because, you know, Hatterberg's a Pacific Northwest kid. So obviously, he looks at Griffey the same way I do, just like he walked on water and he was the great, he floated when he walked in a room. And he said that he was like you said, he was like the coolest guy. He's like, anytime we were on the road, he always wanted to go to Benihana's. Like, he loved Benihana's. And it talked about how they couldn't just go see a movie or anything just because of how big of a star he was. Like, everything had to be like, they had to call ahead and like rent out a movie theater and all these things. And I just got to think, like, and you know, Jeff, like you said, doing what we do on the basketball side, obviously being so lucky, my favorite basketball player ever is Penny Hardaway. I got to be at a press conference with him. And that was like, okay, I can handle my emotions and do this job. That would probably be the one where I'd have a hard time handling my emotions. So the fact that you did it, I'm very impressed.
Yeah, it's I've been in that situation before, but it's when you're doing the job, it's easier. I get asked that question a lot. How do you?
I do too.
Yeah, how do you handle like interviewing a player that you grew up and you always have those moments, you know? But when you're doing the job, you're so focused on if you're covering a team that you're a fan of, it honestly doesn't. You don't even think about it because you're so focused on deadline. You're focused on making sure your details are right, you know? But it is still cool. We could do a whole show on cool moments like that. So, but
my first Xavier game was the year they were the one seed, and it was Georgetown. So my first game is Patrick Ewing. And I was like, oh, this is different. Okay. Yeah. So yeah, it's definitely neat. Jeff, like you said, man, I could literally talk baseball with you all the time, all day. This was so cool. I'm so glad we finally had you on. I promise I won't wait 4 years to do it again. but before we do get out of here, for those of you who do want to follow your work, whether it's college basketball or talk soccer with you, sorry, Chad, I had to bring up the soccer portion. How can our lovely listeners find Jeff Wallner?
You can follow me on X/Twitter.
Still weird to say, isn't it?
Yeah. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeff Wallner. And then on the Twitter page is linked to my Facebook page where I link all of my stories. And then you can find my Instagram. So, or you can just Google me. It's a nice thing about writing for AP is that your stories are everywhere, easy to find. So right now you'll see the occasional college basketball story, but very soon it'll be opening day. So.
Also, I will mention this about Jeff for those who follow him more than sports. Jeff has awesome, awesome taste in music and is a really good guy to talk about concerts with. So you can get a lot of really good stuff from that as well. But awesome.
Well, you know me, I'd rather talk music than sports, honestly.
I know so you would. Yeah.
Anybody wants to hop on my Twitter and talk music, let's go.
Yes, absolutely. We're going to wrap up this week's edition of Late Night Reds here on the Riverfront. Don't forget, since next Sunday is obviously Super Bowl Sunday, we will not ruin our show by going head to head with that. We're going to take next week to kind of hang out, refresh, and get ready for spring training like the guys do. So be sure to have us marked for that would be February 18th for our comeback for that. We'll be excited to do that as well. But on behalf of Ben, on behalf of everyone at the Riverfront, this is Tim Daniel. Have a great night. We'll see you guys in a couple weeks.
Take care, guys. Thanks.
See you guys.